Hello, and welcome to the Green Tea Party, where we discuss conservative solutions to environmental problems. My name is Zach Torpy.
And I'm Katie Zakreski. Together, we'll guide you through complex issues and provide strategies to address them, all while remaining faithful to our conservative values.
Trust me, it'll be a good time.
Yeah, it's a party, so grab your mugs and we'll pour the tea.
So, Katie, today I figured we'd do an episode on geopolitics and demographics.
Ooh, I love some demographics. All right.
Yeah, because demographics drive geopolitics.
I know I like to say that, I'm not the nerd, I'm not the scientist, but I don't know what it is in my little brain that loves demographics. I think it's because I'm used to like being from a comms marketing background. And so I'm always like, in my comms realm, I'm always like, what kinds of people like reading what? Who where likes reading what? Does this content appeal to everybody? So something about demographics has always scratched that little itch on my smooth brain. So I'm really excited to dive into this topic today.
Yeah, I'm passionate about geopolitics. We live in a very interesting time. It's not always the most fun, but we do live in very interesting and eventful times the past 10, 15 years.
You know, I don't want to go like too deep into this, but I started watching a documentary on my lunch break today about young people in China who are more or less like creating a let it rot movement where they're like, okay, job prospects are bad, economy's bad, we've got all this education for nothing. I'm just not going to get a job because I'm not going to boost the economy of a country that doesn't like me. And so it's really interesting to hear them talk about all the different demographics that have played a role in that, ages that have played a role in that, all the policies that have played a role in that. The one-child policy, you've got a lot of young people in particular who don't want to go work a job or take care of their aging parents or things of that nature. And so that talked a lot about demographics and population booms and things of that nature. So I'm super excited to see what you have prepared today. Very timely, it sounds like.
Yeah. And that's the lie flat movement. They're upset about how bad the economy is compared to what their parents grew up in, their like lack of opportunity, which is...
Yeah,
I feel like what a lot of the young
familiar,
people.
Are, yeah,
yeah.
Where have I heard that before? Everywhere else? Fascinating. So let's talk a little bit more about this topic, Zach. Take it away.
So, Katie, do you remember growing up hearing about how the world population was going to keep growing and we were just going to run out of resources and like learning about how many Earths we would need per country to survive?
Yeah, I remember that stuff was real scary. I remember seeing stuff like that on like Teen Nick and like a lot of the local like Earth Day organizations. But I unlocked a hidden memory this morning that was like sitting in my back living room with my little Earth Day can of beans that you could grow like out of a can to remind you to take care of greenery and all the scary commercials about, oh, we use up X amount of planet Earth's resources of this. But it was just terrifying. Yeah, I think my first introduction to like doomer news was Earth resource stuff on Teen Nick. So yeah, hidden memory unlocked.
So that's actually the toned down version that our parents got.
Oh gosh.
They were even more scared of it. What really like crystallized this for a lot of people was this book called The Population Bomb by Paul R. Ulrich. Basically, in this book, he talks about how the world is just like populations are exploding and like growing so fast, and like it doesn't look like it's going to slow down anytime. And we're just going to reach a point where we're not going to have enough resources, enough food to feed all the people in the world. And it's going to have like a mass starvation effect.
I don't like that. I don't like that at all.
So world famine, end of the world. It's not a great look.
Yeah, no, just a smidge of famine.
But it shows how difficult it is to figure out and predict for the future. As we now know, that did not happen. We figured out how to grow more food and more efficiently. That was called the Green Revolution.
Great work, team.
They originally forecasted that hundreds of millions of people would starve to death in the 70s, including 65 million Americans. And that basically India was just going to eat itself out. And this just continued to scare people until the Green Revolution. One of the leading scientists of this revolution was Norman Borlaug, who worked with Mexican scientists on disease-resistant and high-yield wheat. So it's basically the pre-GMOs, like when it was just like crossbreeding and trying to get super effective at growing strains of wheat and corn to mix together and create like super wheat.
All right. My new favorite superhero, super wheat.
So it was growing like super wheat, super corn, and super rice. And I think it was in the 70s and 90s, rice and wheat yields in Asia increased 50% thanks to Philippine and Chinese research developments, including enriching soil through fertilizers, combating plant pathogens and pests with pesticides, and modern irrigation methods.
All right.
This is all occurring during the Cold War when you have the nuclear scare, and if anyone's watching Fallout, it's sort of this time set timeline.
Oh my gosh, such a good show. Okay, I am so glad that you touched on that, Zach, because that is really not my genre. It's not. And I liked the music from the Fallout games. My fiance loves the Fallout games, and so we saw that, and I was like, all right, let's give it a shot. And again, normally not at all my realm, and I thoroughly enjoyed the first episode. I've heard that they're going to do like three different storylines. Well, one of them's going to be good, one of them's going to be neutral, one of them's going to be bad. So I really did like it. So yeah, that random plug for that. We're not sponsored or anything, but that was great. So go watch that.
So this was like the era of like, basically it was so popular to have dystopia, doomsday, the 1984. The U.S. is trying to hedge its bets against the Soviet Union with the U.S. Agency for International Development. So it was basically the U.S. was going into poorer countries and supplying them with special foods that can grow faster, grow stronger, and are more pest resistant so that these people wouldn't starve. You know, it's probably easier to fight communism when you're not starving to death.
True, true. The goal should always be to fight communism anyway, but if you could not be hungry while you're doing it, even better.
The world avoided catastrophe thanks to these advancements. The population today has gone from 3.7 billion in the 60s to 8.1 billion today.
Wow.
We've more than doubled in 50 years.
That is crazy. Wow.
According to the UN, world population is expected to peak at 10.4 billion in the mid-2080s.
That's terrifying. Yeah, well, we should be around and having to deal with that with no retirement or social security. So I'm really looking forward to it if I'm still around.
It's an interesting change because for so long, we just thought that we were just going to keep growing and growing and never end. And now, because so many economies advanced so far, and there's so much more opportunity for especially women in the world, the fertility rate has just plummeted. And now we're not having as many kids, especially in the developed world and places like the US, Europe, China, Korea, Japan, where they're not meeting the necessary births to maintain population.
How interesting. I was just reading a book about this. I'm looking it up as I say this. Again, one of those episodes where everything is very timely. I'm reading a book by, and I'm probably going to butcher this name, Atul Gawande, Being Mortal, Medicine, and What Matters in the End. And he talks a lot about like end-of-life care in terms of like elderly care, elderly nursing homes, things of that nature. And he talks a lot about the problem that we're having with that in the United States because of the population decline within the last 30 years or so in terms of not having as many kids to be able to take care of their parents when they get old and can't take care of themselves. So there's been an increase in nursing homes and elderly care facilities and retirement facilities. It talks a lot about the burdens that has kind of put on society as a product of the population trends over the last 50 years. So super timely, super interesting stuff. I definitely recommend reading that if you want to know more about the fertility rate and population boom's impact on social things like that and demographics like that.
Yeah, that's like super critical to understanding demographics and how it's affecting just all these different countries. When you look at like their population pyramids and how like some of them are so like inverted and messed up with like just tons of old people and no children being born, that it's like, how do we take care of this huge aging population with no workers going into the workforce?
Right. And I mean, and that's even one of the things that came up in that China documentary that I was talking about earlier, when you've got a lot of especially Asiatic cultures like that, that really value caring for your parents in their old age. When you've got places like China that had a one child policy, which in that case is a policy mandated decrease in population or fertility, compared to here where it's more organically happening because of opportunity. They were talking about even there, you know, you've got one child preferably you want a boy because he doesn't have to leave the family. But even then, you've only got one child who can, and please excuse my loud cat in the background, she's disabled. You've only got one child who's supposed to go out, get married, start their own family, own property, be successful in their career after going to school, and take care of both of their parents. So one or both of their parents. But I mean, you're seeing even the same issue here. So it's everywhere right now. I think we're seeing that increase in older populations and decrease in younger populations, which is not only bad for older people, but it's really bad for your workforce and your economy.
Yeah, just the pressure of having to take care of all your parents and possibly all those grandparents with your spouse. It just puts such pressure on you and basically an entire generation to overproduce and earn more money than previous generations and be able to support that aging demographic.
Right.
So, Katie, do you know what overshoot day is?
I actually don't. I saw that in your notes and I am drawing a complete blank on that. So please tell me more.
That is the day that the Earth uses about one approximate Earth's worth of resources. So it's like, if we wanted to sustain and be a long-term society, we'd have to use enough resources to that would regenerate every year and be sustainable. But we use a lot more resources than that.
Of course.
The time of year that day occurs is decreasing every year. And now it's currently July 25th as of 2024 will be overshoot day.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, that's scary. Thanks for that fact. I love that Zach fact.
So if everyone lived as an average American, we would need about 5.1 Earths to sustain our level of consumption indefinitely. And like maintain.
Yeah, that sounds pretty on track. I hate that by a lot. That's horrific. Another horrible Zach fact. All right, that's two in a row. What else we got, Zach?
It makes you understand what Avatar. It's like, oh, they went to this planet to take all the resources. Oh, okay. I guess that's...
Yeah, I know. I know. And like, I think about that. I think about that all the time. I saw a quote the other day. I forgot who said it, but it was on the Climate Changed podcast by the BTS Center up in Maine. And one of the guests on their show said something like, we always talk about needing to save the planet. The Earth totally does not need humanity to save it. In fact, if the Earth had a choice, she'd probably package all the human beings up and send them somewhere else and be just fine afterwards. So we talk a lot about needing to save the planet when, in fact, we're probably the worst thing for the planet. The planet was doing just fine before we got here. So it's just really interesting that, you know, even on days like today, again, excuse the cat noises in the background. We talk about how much, oh, we got to save the planet, save the planet. It comes down to us. Like, man, we're the problem. And Stats like this pointed out.
Yeah. Sometimes I imagine the Earth as like a cat or a dog, like just trying to shake off the fleas, like, get off me. Yeah. So currently, China uses more resources than US, but because their population is so large on a per capita basis, we still use more resources per person and emit more CO2 and use just about more of everything. There's still a large portion of China's population that is still very poor and isn't able to consume on the level that us in Europe are.
Yeah, I was just watching again. You know what? I'm just going to like have our account tweet the link to this documentary. But that was another thing they brought up, too, that because local government employees have been fudging the numbers of the GDP and the economy for like the last 60 or like maybe not 60 years, but like 30 years, that what they say their GDP is 60% better than what their actual GDP is. So like you've got so many economic declines that have come as a result of having a declining population. And they're not even telling us what the correct numbers are, but Americans who have done the math have showed that perhaps the greatest trick that China ever pulled was convincing everybody else in the world that China was an economic superpower by lying for the sake of not being kicked out of the government. So it's just been super interesting to like, to read this or to watch this documentary and see how a lot of those demographic factors play into effect on that and how we feel the repercussions of that even all the way over here.
Yeah. Yeah. I could do a whole episode on China's economic and demographics and for the future of their economy, because it's so interesting seeing how everyone was afraid of the Chinese tiger, and now everyone's like, after their real estate bubble burst and like future demographics collapse, everyone's like, oh, maybe that was just a paper tiger. Maybe we shouldn't have been so worried.
That definitely was not at all as menacing as we made it out to be.
We avoided mass famine. The world has modernized and changed, replacing our fear of this global famine with now a fear of a immense demographic decline in developed world, in the developed world. Kate, do you know how many children we need on average to maintain our population?
Well, I'm kind of morbid, Zach. So if you ask me, my answer is 4, because y'all don't have a couple kids for insurance, is what I tell everybody. Or a bit tragic. So that comes from a lot of childhood trauma. So my answer is 4, but I'm pretty sure if anybody else heard that, they'd be like, yeah, that's the Catholic answer. So I have no idea. I if I had to ballpark, I'd say 2 or 3. That sounds pretty normal for like the average American family, I feel like. Like everybody I knew growing up had 2 or 3 kids. So that is where I'm going to lock it in with.
So we would need a fertility rate of 2.1 children per person to maintain population. Right. Yeah. Medicine's gotten pretty good. The kids don't die that often. Mm-hmm. They make it to adulthood.
Yeah, yeah. You know, with the exception of the occasional freak accident, nobody's getting rickets or yellow fever usually. So maybe you don't need as many insurance kids as you did 100 years ago. So we got that going for us.
So in 1963, the fertility rate peaked at 5.32 for the world. It's now down to about 2.32. Which just shows
so we over doubled the world's population in like 50 years, but the peak fertility rate has been cut in half in the last 50 years.
Yes. Yeah. Wow. So we're still growing, but much, much slower. That's right. Why we doubled in 50 years, but now by mid 2080s, we're expected to peak at like 10.4 billion.
That's crazy. So,
from the current population of, I think we're at 8.1 billion currently.
You know, I have to wonder if that like takes the economy into effect, because we've talked this whole episode about how shit the economy is, and that's a lot of the reason why we're seeing people have fewer kids. So I wonder if that projection accounts for having an economic slump as bad as the last 10 years or so have been.
I'll go into that a little bit more in the planned second episode of this podcast.
Oh, okay. All right. Sorry, I'm putting the cart in front of the horse here. Okay. All right. Go ahead. Let's hear some more Zach facts.
So this decrease can be largely attributed to increases in opportunities for women across the world, especially in developing nations, as it's been strongly linked that as women gain access to education and working, that they have children at a later date, which sort of tumbles down and just ends up in you having less children as a family. And it's like more family planning, more contraception is available to people around the world. So people are organizing the families how they want. And it's also that we've gotten away from farming and children are not viewed as free labor anymore, but more of a, they're more
burdensome. I'm getting like the cleanest house on earth when I'm having kids. I can't wait to cash in on that, man. If you can't afford a team of cleaning maids, just give birth to them, man. Y'all, my kids, man, they're going to be listening to this in 20 years, and they're going to be like, we should have known. Somebody should have said something. No, but in all seriousness, yeah, I mean, it's really interesting how 100 years ago, you had families that had 10 kids, and it was like, why? Oh, so they can help with the family farm. like that's it. Like, we didn't want 10 kids. Yeah, it's free labor. So
Tim, your production rate's down. I don't know. You got to pick it up.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to
get full portion at breakfast anymore.
Right. And I know so many older people, I mean, in my own family in particular, I think of my grandparents and my great uncles and great aunts whose first language was Polish, who barely graduated from high school because so much of their schedule required them to work on the farm, not go to school season or during the planting season. Like, so more of their lives as young people revolved around agriculture and farming and whatever the family trade was than it did education. So it's really interesting to see how just 100 years later, it's completely different. compared to how it was then. Like now your whole life as a young person is education, so that you can get one of the few coveted well-paying jobs compared to all of your hundreds of other peers.
We developed from, you don't need a degree to now you need a bachelor's to do anything to, and to,
I would even say a bachelor's has become obsolete. Like now it's
a now it's like you need a master's.
Yeah. Or like some sort of letters behind your name, like to make $13 an hour. Like, really? Like, is that the goal? I would much rather go back to having a family farm at that rate.
So that like hard pressure, constant competition is just making it harder to family plan. And like, it's like, when do you prioritize your planning a family versus your career? Like, if you want to keep advancing, like, and you have a kid and you're out for months on paternity or maternity leave, and that just stops you from progressing and really puts a damper on
your fortunes. And that's if you get decent maternity or paternity leave wherever you're at.
Yeah, yeah.
So for many women, you're sacrificing the career that you worked so hard for to raise a child. And a lot of women who don't get to actually start working their career until they're in their late 20s, early 30s, mid 30s, and in some cases early 40s, don't want to stop all of that so that they can have kids because of the way that the economy is.
Yeah. So the rich and developing world, the US, Europe, parts of China, Korea, Japan, Australia, have all reached this point where it's just super competitive. You're constantly learning, you got to be better and better and better. And that has just plummeted fertility rates. And it's shifting the balance of demographics around the world, because the developing world parts in Africa is still has a robust fertility rate. And at some point, Africa will become much more powerful geopolitical figure in the world because their population will be so much larger, especially in countries like Nigeria, the Democratic Republic of Congo. These countries can stabilize and main and avoid internal and external conflicts. They will grow in power, but that's the key question, is if they will be left alone to develop and not be taken advantage of as they are now.
Which is super interesting compared to everything else that we've talked about, Zach, because I think that we, when we think of people who are like global threats, I don't even think of Africa. Like, I don't even think of Africa when I'm given a lot of prompts in terms of like economic superpowers, militaristic allies, sustainable, they're just off the radar for me. And so I really think that China, in a way, by, like you said, propping up this imagery of being an economic tiger, has really drawn a lot of attention away from Africa and kind of given it the opportunity to like be left up to their own devices right now in terms of not being picked on by anybody from an international political perspective, like really just being left right now to cultivate things, to build things up. I think they're going to end up becoming a superpower in the next couple of decades because they're not being roped into all this geopolitical bullshit right now.
Don't worry.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. That's true. I'm probably just not hearing about it because Western media is like, okay, let's talk more about shit today. But who knows? Maybe they're not feeling it as badly as they were, as they would were China to not be propping up this imagery of being as big of a threat as we perceive them to be, or as what they've made other countries assume that they are. Like maybe this, we've shined the spotlight on so many of these regular characters that a lot of these other countries are using this as an opportunity to kind of grow in the background, maybe without as much interference as they would have otherwise. Again, maybe that's a 100% tinfoil hat moment. Maybe you're going to be listening to this in a couple of years going, wow, that was like way off the mark. Fine. I can own up to that if that's the case. But yeah, that's what I'm thinking about that.
Yeah. I think Africa will develop into a much more important regional player on the global market, hopefully at some point soon, and we'll stop being destroyed and taken advantage of by foreign powers. But it's also important in the environmental movement that we understand these demographics. And now that the populations in the developed and consuming parts of the world are decreasing, it's sort of like understanding how these countries need to develop and like, can we assist them in developing more environmentally friendly, more green, instead of being super reliant on oil and gas and sort of just turning the same tables that the US and developed nations in Europe have sort of turned and running into the same issues, becoming mm-hmm. pigeonholed to gas and reliant on like exports, imports, becoming an export economy in oil, or becoming reliant on importing this fossil fuels. Mm-hmm. We will dive more into these topics and the impacts of these demographics issues on the second episode. So please keep your ears perked and catch that one when it comes out. Let's go to our closing. So our action steps, always write your members of Congress and let them know about what you think about the changes in demographics and what you think the U.S. should be focusing on in these issues. Learn about this. This is important for understanding the future and how the nations will develop. I have a book recommendation, The End of the World is Just Beginning, Mapping the Collapse of Globalization by Peter Zion. He's a massive political, geopolitical thinker in the world. He is fascinating to listen to and understand his thought process and how he views what is happening around the world to understand what is going to happen. So I would highly suggest reading that to get a glimpse into geopolitics and how demographics impacts that.
For you, our listener, email us with your thoughts. Our email is info@greenteapartyradio.com. Thank you for listening to Green Tea Party Radio, and a very special thank you to all of our patrons. We could not do this without you.
If you're interested in getting early access to episodes as well as Green Tea Party Radio merch, check us out at greenteapartyradio.com. If you have feedback, tell us what's on your mind and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok.
And just so you know, this is our passion project. We don't have any organizational sponsor. Also, this show is not representative of the policies, thoughts, or opinions of the Diocese of Little Rock, Catholic Climate Covenant, or any of our employers. We're just a bunch of young conservatives that are building a movement because we want the world to know that conservatives have important things to say about climate change.
And if you want to hear us on your radio station, email us at info@greenteapartyradio.com and give us the details about your campus and your radio station. The email again is info@greenteapartyradio.com. Thanks for listening to our rants on geopolitics and demographics.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we've got plenty of those. I think we could set up so many other episodes where we just talk about China all day long.
Lots to talk about there.
China.
Hi, I'm Drew Ierley. I am the Conservative Outreach Director for Citizens Climate Lobby. My path to being a conservative, concerned about climate action, was definitely a long one. Growing up, it's a very rural area. You had to be into the outdoors or you were going to be bored out of your mind. So I grew up doing a lot of hunting, fishing. I was the second person on my mom's side to graduate high school. I graduated June 6th, 05 at like 7:30 at night, and by 8 o'clock the next morning, I was on my way to basic training on my 17th birthday. I had deployments to Iraq, Afghanistan, rotations through Cuba. It was during this time that I really became concerned with energy infrastructure, but I wasn't ready to take action yet. It took the birth of a 10-pound baby girl with cheeks so big she couldn't open her eyes to really get me to open mine. My life just went from the next 50 years to the next 75. What if she's the veteran that follows in my footsteps and she's in the VA suffering from exposure? You know, what if she's on a fossil fuel route and subject to an IED? How will I be able to look at her in the eye and say, I knew that this could be an issue that you would have to face and I chose to do nothing about it? It's why we fight wars. We fight them now so our kids don't have to. I am fighting climate change now so my daughters don't have to. A lot of people, they say conservatives don't care about climate change, and it's not true at all. We just want sensible policies that don't destroy the economy in trying to find a solution. We have that here at Citizens Climate Lobby. There are a lot of leadership opportunities for conservatives, especially in red states and districts with Republican congressional offices. Conservatives can also join CCL's Conservative Caucus. It's a national group of Republicans and other right-of-center individuals where conservatives can get together and regularly meet online and have strictly conservative-based conversations. Sharing our personal story is how we make a difference.
conservative and concerned about climate change? You're not alone. My name is Chelsea Henderson, and I host RepublicEN.org's EcoRight Speaks, bringing you weekly guest interviews and stories. John Kasich, Christine Todd Whitman, Congresswoman Nancy Mace, meteorologist Marshall Shepard. Each week, we have a conversation with an EcoRight leader bringing you information, opinions, personal stories, and much, much more. Download, listen, subscribe, and join us each week on the EcoRight Speaks.